Live from Circa Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company.
Rolling on Hour 3, Cofield and Company. You heard it, Circa. Adam Hill is here, Mateo, Cofield. Preseason poll, Boise picked in first place, second and third, UNLV and Fresno both getting four first place votes. Boise got most of the first place votes. It looks to be a conference that could be very split down the middle with higher achievers and some programs at the bottom. And there's a lot of new coaches in the league. There's also a ton of new players in the league, which is why I would caution anyone getting that worked up about a preseason poll, because even some of the top teams, Adam, have new quarterbacks. We don't know what these quarterbacks are going to do. First year in an offense with a new coach, new coaching staff. The transfer portal now forces these, you know, get chemistry, rhythm, quickly scenarios. You don't know if it's going to work for half the season. UNLV was one of the really special stories last year because not only did they play high-level offense with the go-go, which I think had people on their heels, they had guys develop as on the two and three line and blend in nicely. That doesn't happen all the time in the transfer portal or using the transfer portal. You're going to have a lot of guys not buy in. Right?
Sure. Guys, you know, not happy with their deals or looking at other guys' deals and say, well, he got more money, but I'm a better player. And
I feel like in the Mountain West that doesn't happen as much.
It could.
It's more about playing time and learning the system, and sometimes guys just don't get their systems until halfway through the season.
Sure. It's a process.
Luckily, radio stations are not like that. Like, we should all be working together as a well-oiled machine, in my mind, to service our clients. That's how we're in business, right? But that doesn't always happen. But honestly, I'd like to. I think, you know, all the shows should be cross-promoting. But I don't need to be in a rhythm with the press box. Can I tell you something? I don't even know if I'm embarrassed by it. It's just a reality of what we do. How often do you have people ask you about folks on Raider Nation Radio, or I guess they wouldn't ask you about the morning show because you work with Ed, or ask you about Tyler, or you're like, hey, you know, how's Ryan the hockey guy doing? You know, I know you guys talk all the time.
That one hasn't happened.
Right? Like, often. People will ask me stuff, and they'll also ask about other stations in our group, and I'm like, who on the point? Like, I haven't seen Chris Fox like four times in 20 years.
It does happen.
I don't really know Chris.
To your point, it happens with a lot of people at the RJ where I'm like,
well, you have a much bigger staff.
Huge. Like, and departments. Right. Departments that don't work together at all.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. I don't know who you're talking about.
I got to say something that I had no idea was happening. I was told here today that Tyler Bischoff is getting married. Had no idea.
Well, it's happening in Scotland.
No. Not where it is that he was even getting married. It was a running joke. You know, last hour we mentioned, or Willie did, Willie Ramirez was in, we mentioned Desiree Reed Francois, who used to bust his chops about it. I'm like, no idea it happened. No idea it's on the way. And then you're right. I had no idea that it was a destination wedding.
Sure. I think it's at a castle or something.
No clue.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Does Desiree know?
We better tell her. Yeah. She, you know what? She probably knows, and I don't.
I think she's hiding.
I don't know, man. You knew?
That Tyler was getting married?
Yeah.
Yes.
No idea. All right. Scotland or Ireland?
I think it's Scotland.
Okay, I was told Ireland.
It could be Ireland. They're similar.
There was also another question, real quick, on this. Our buddy Mike Romala from the Las Vegas Sun, everyone's favorite writer who covers UNLV sports.
Is he getting married?
Mike is not at Mountain West Conference Media Days because he's already across the pond.
For the wedding?
Yeah. Tyler's doing a show here tomorrow. So I guess Mike is like, hey, vacation time. Getting there early.
I will say it's...
I like that.
One of my big regrets is I went on a work trip to a very far away location.
You squeezed it in, didn't you?
And I squeezed it in. And I was like, why did I not go early and come back late? Why didn't I take a week off after the event? When I went to Melbourne, Australia, which was very cool.
And that was a quick turnaround trip?
Quick trip.
How long is the flight? Or was it 2 days?
15 hours.
Oh, wow. And you made that a quick trip.
Yeah.
Took a trip to L.A. for Adam.
And I was like, why?
30
why
hours.
Why did I not stay?
You're stupid. And you like work too much.
Like, I never want to get back on the plane to go to Australia again, so yeah. I should have done this. Should have done, like, the whole tour of Australia.
And the RJ gave you a big raise after that, right?
Sure.
No, yeah. They have no idea you did that. Yeah. They have no idea you did it.
Quick turnaround.
None.
Had to be back for, like, Mountain West Media Day or something.
Adam has to live up to Sus' expectations. He set a bar so high. Okay. This is really the first time we've been at a Mountain West Conference Media Day where UNLV football has had really lofty expectations. Jackson Woodard, linebacker returning after an all-Mountain West Conference season, sat down with Adam and we got right into it. Like, how do the higher expectations feel?
For me, it's not much different. Coach always talks about tacking one game, one rep, one day at a time. And when you do that, you aren't really focused on anything else besides winning that rep. And that allows you to be free. And then also, preparation is key. If you're prepared, it doesn't matter what the expectation is. It doesn't matter what happened last time. If you prepare the right way, you're going to be ready. And with the talent and ability that this team has, if we prepare the right way, it doesn't matter what the expectations are, we're going to win.
Why was – and I think, you know, there's a lot of factors and a lot of reasons that we've all kind of expressed for why it happened. But why was Barry Odom able to do what he was able to do so quickly with so many guys coming in, buying into what he wanted to do? And really, it's usually a process to turn things around. Why was he able to do it so quickly?
Yeah, he's a winner, and he demands excellence. He demands winning. And he sets a standard, and that's the standard. He doesn't accept anything below that. And so when he came in with that winning standard, and he's a winner, he's the hardest worker in that building. And so that's so contagious as a group of guys. When you see your head coach working that hard, it only makes you want to work harder. And so he came in, instilled the standard. All the leaders, guys in the locker room bought into that. And you know, it happened like it happened.
It came up again today because I guess the San Diego State coach is going to ride a surfboard on Monday. He's going to go out and try to surf for some event. And I said, okay, UNLV's coach rode a bull.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch that video? Did you give him a little grief? Did you make fun of him a little bit? That was insane that he did that. And I would never do anything like that, but you got to make fun of him a little bit, right?
So when he told me he was doing that, and I've been around bulls and I've been around, you know, cattle my whole life, I was shocked, but I was like, man, that's going to be pretty cool. You know, that's going to be. And then it started getting down time, you know, closer to time. And I'm like, hey, you really wanted to do this. And he's like, I don't know what I've gotten myself into. But then he went out and did it. And it really was for us.
Yeah.
I mean, so much respect. He loves us to death, and he would do anything. He'd ride a bull for us. And he did that. And so it was funny. You know, the next day he comes in and he's got the video and he was able to poke fun at himself. So he runs through it just play by play, what happened, what was going through his mind, and the whole team was dying laughing. So it was awesome.
I went there. Actually, was some media people were asking me about it today. Like, did he really do? He really did it. But you're talking. You've been around. You know, if you've been around livestock your life, I assumed it was going to be like, all right, he's going to get out on like a pony or something. Like, someone's that dude. That was a real bull.
That's
thing.
Crazy. It was a big old bull that was not happy to be in that cage. And when it got out, it was doing whatever it could to get him off. So back home, we got steer, which is basically just cows that have been neutered. So they stay small. They're just real small cows. And we'll do, it's called shoot dogging. And, you know, they let them out the chute, and then you got to wrestle them to the ground. And I've been wanting to do it. So I did it this summer, and I didn't think I could have more respect for him, but after just handling those little things, I mean, if you get on one of those, you'd get thrown off. That thing, it was unbelievable to watch it. I was there as well, and it was crazy to watch that.
Jackson Woodard, UNLV linebacker here at Mountain West Conference Media Day with Cofield and Company, Adam Hill alongside. So Odom's got, I think he's probably got multiple sides, but two sides. We get to see the sort of poised, calm dude. I know that's not the way he coaches, but you know, he's also got the linebacker mentality. Like, yep. He's competitive, he can be mean. And I'm not saying they were necessarily mean. I was thrown back a little bit coming back in the spring for some media availability, and Odom started on it like, last year not good enough. And I'm like, in this market, you guys won 9 games. You guys are heroes. UNLV football, as Adam said a couple minutes ago, that's a great season. And then I talked to Shear and I was like, man,
Like they had some satisfaction out of last year, but they're like, you guys are fired up. Yeah. Like the end of last year, not good enough.
100%. It's not the standard. It left a horrible taste in your mouth. When you do everything you can to win, everything you can, and you don't win, it's not successful. You didn't do what you sought out to do. Like last year, in my mind, was not a successful year. Not even close. Not even close to what we want to do. First of all, we need to dominate every opponent that we play, especially with how hard we work and what we do. But not coming up with the championship and being in that game, it's just not the standard. It's not who we are. So we're fired up, and we learned so much from that, especially the way that, you know, we lost season. I think some of it, we lost our habits a little bit. And we learned that, and we've been talking about it, just preaching it all the way back in February. We've been preaching that. And so, you know, we're fired up going into the season, and hopefully, you know, we'll get it all figured out.
Did you have a good season personally? Did you do what you expected? Did you exceed, you know, maybe what you were expecting? Shear told me that, and it wasn't just me. He was talking to the whole market on a radio interview 3 weeks ago. He was like, you know what? Jackson was probably a little better than I thought he could be. He had a lot of confidence. I know he told me before you started playing, that, like, this guy's really good. Yeah. And you exceeded his expectations. What about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I had a good season. I look back at film, and it's – I have so much to work on, and that's what's so good about the offseason. It gives you so much time to work on your craft. And if it comes down to speed, to flexibility, whatever it is in the weight room, I was able to accomplish all that I wanted to accomplish this offseason, and we still got 3 weeks to go going into camp. But then when it comes to just football, I mean, I got zone coverage, rushing the passer, just taking angles. I mean, there's so much stuff that I look back on, like, what are you doing? So I thought I had a good year. I thought I could have had a much better year, and that's what I'm looking to do this season. It should be a lot better this season. I'm telling people, don't expect much, but it's going to be a different me out there.
We talked about the expectations a little bit ago. I'll follow that up by saying last year at Media Day, right here in the same room,
yep,
UNLV got one first place vote,
yep,
and the person who did it was kind of mocked.
Yep.
Oh, what are you doing? Why would you pick UNLV there? Players, every once in a while, we've seen over the years, maybe one guy gets named to first team, maybe one guy gets some votes. The team is littered with UNLV names all over the place, including yourself, obviously. Yeah. Like, what does that do for you? I guess you can't really – it's nothing. It's preseason, right? It doesn't get you any wins. But what kind of message does it send to you and to your teammates to be recognized in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you're saying at the end, it is preseason, so – at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. We got to go earn it. You know, whoever it was last year was not who it was. So we got to go earn it. But it speaks volume on the team that we have and the players in the locker room. I wouldn't even be close to where I am if it weren't for my defenders that I got on the team that are playing with me, that are pushing me every day. It doesn't matter what we're doing. I'm racing to be the best in all that I do. And then it also speaks measures to the coaches. They've set us up. All we got to go do is do what we're told, and we're going to be successful. And so when you have that many people on a list like that, it speaks volume to the locker room and also the coaches.
And you talk about the coaches, you know, we mentioned Barry and what he's done and the entire staff. A lot of people thought, okay, you had success at UNLV, you're probably going to go somewhere else. Yeah. Barry's going to move. A lot of players are going to move. I guess what message to send to you guys as players that Barry Odom said, I have more work to do here. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to continue to work at this.
Yeah, he's bought in. He's just like us, just like Ricky will tell you. We have so much unfinished business going into this year. You know, everyone, no matter where we could have gone, we're so focused on a championship and bringing this team together. But having a coach that comes back that believes in this team, that believes in this city, it means a lot, and it just builds confidence in us.
All Mountain West Conference linebacker Jackson Woodard from the Rebels is here with Cofield and company. Let's talk a little personnel. We're going to have a lot of time to do this and preview the season in August, but let's talk some personnel. There were big changes at defensive back, and I'll go back to that Shear conversation where he's like, too many deep shots, man.
Yeah,
too many deep shots last year, and so the room has been changed up. And let's also admit, you guys got kind of screwed by injuries, right? And I know you don't like to use excuses, but Baldwin and Jarae going down for a while, that changed things up.
Right.
There's a lot more depth now, and it seems like there's a lot more size.
Yeah, 100%. The depth is scary. I mean, who – you look at that and you're like, who's going to even play? How are we have to play this kid, but how is he going to play? And that's exactly where you want to be. We got John O'Baldwin, like you were saying. We got Jet Elad coming back. We got Cam Oliver. We got, plenty of guys who have a lot of experience last year. And then we brought in some real studs, some real dogs back there. And so this, it's, I mean, it's a scary group, long, tall, physical group. They love to get better. I'm fired up about this D-backs, you know, this group.
We talked about the bowl game. How different was the communication in the bowl game?
Yeah, it was quite different. The weird thing about the bowl game is five of us had, or four, I can't remember how many had, you know, the earpiece in there. So coach might say, hey, whatever, back up. Well, five people would back up when it's not, you know, it's meant for one person. So it was different. I thought it was fine. I'm old school. I kind of like the signals coming from.
Do you want it this year, or are they going to have it in Baldwin? What are they going to do?
Yeah, I'll have it this year. You know, that's what we have right now. So it's nice. I don't mind it. It doesn't change too much for me, honestly. Like I said, I kind of still like the signals just so everybody gets it. And I think it works in the NFL because they huddle. So the offense goes in huddles, the defense goes in huddles. They say a play, I repeat it back. Well, in college, it's if you're going against a go-go offense, they're lining up like this, and he's trying to teach it, and then I got to say it. So it's nice to have the signals, but once I get used to it, I think I'll enjoy having it in my ear.
Jackson Winters.
How much have you guys – we talked to you guys in the bowl game. How much have you been able to do it? I know when I talked to Coach in spring, it wasn't quite ready yet because the system wasn't there. Have you been able to use it in practices at all?
No, so we've practiced with it, just having it on, just repeating, just in regular stuff, just checking and everything. Fall camp, I don't know exactly, but I'm sure we'll have we'll have it every practice, even in like the walkthroughs and stuff. So I don't know exactly what the rules are on having it, but we'll be ready once it comes game time. We'll take full advantage of it.
You mentioned you would play offense if you could.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I think I'm recalling the story correctly. Your mom, the one who thinks that you can play everything at the highest level?
Yes, 100%. She doesn't know why I'm not a quarterback. She's confused why I don't play tight end. She's confused on, and me and my dad are just like, oh no, like. But she just doesn't know. She and she loves me.
Well,
so
she must have seen you playing other sports though. And 100%. Did you play baseball?
Yeah, I played baseball growing up, and I was a pitcher. I thought I was going to go play baseball in college. That was my original thing. I played receiver. She loved whenever I played receiver, but she just, I don't know. She's funny, but yeah, she thinks I can play quarterback. She has no clue though.
We got an issue here because we've watched a charity softball game here in town become pretty big with the,
it's Saturday night
with the Raiders and VGK. And we saw last year, Nate Hobbs, NFL player, not necessarily an outfielder in softball because he actually got hit in the head.
Yeah.
He misjudged a fly ball.
Yeah.
Missed the start of training camp, by the way.
Yeah.
Ricky White's in the game.
Yep.
From what I've heard, Ricky played basketball.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know he played football.
I asked him.
DH in the game? Like,
so he said he's batting third, and he's never swung a bat before in his life.
Oh, no.
Is what he was saying. No, I think he might have, you know, held it, but he's never actually played baseball. So it's going to be very fun. I'm looking forward to watching him try to swing a bat.
You're laughing already. Yeah.
If he gets on base, he's probably dangerous on the base paths.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would just pinch run him every time. Yeah. Put him in center field. First.
Are you going to go?
I don't know. So I think it's sold out. He didn't even post anything or tell anybody about it.
All conference. And so, you're all conference. You get in.
Call
so, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I would love to go. It would be hilarious to see what Ricky's going to do out there.
Do you want him to succeed or fail? I mean, it's more fun if he fails, right?
I don't think I need to want him to succeed because I think he's going to fail. And I love Ricky to death, and he's going to be the number one player in college football this year. He's not going to be able to hit it. I don't think so. I don't think he's got a chance.
Wow. That stings. Hell of a teammate, but he's being honest. Jackson Woodard, part of the conversation we had earlier with the UNLV linebacker, talking about Ricky White, wide receiver who's in the big celebrity softball all-star game. VGK and the Raiders. Ricky White might be up against it. We'll see.
I hope he gets some practice.
Yes, swing the bat. It sounded like he wanted to go to the Cages or somewhere. I don't know.
Hopefully. Something.
Aces got a win today. Remember, next week is the end of the first half of the season, and then the league breaks for all-star / Olympics. Last game before the break is against the Angel Reese's and the Chicago Sky. That's on the 16th. Right now we've got four tickets.
Defending player of the week, Angel Reese.
In the ESPN Fan Zone. The Fan Zone is brought to you by Westar Credit Union and Finley Volkswagen Henderson. Four tickets right now. Caller 7. Griffin's going to hook you up. Aces against the Sky on the 16th. 364-1100. Caller 7. 364-1100.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Exciting day around the Mountain West. Football media day going down. Another day tomorrow with the coaches. Today the players. Today the release of the preseason poll, all conference. Caleb Herring, a tried and true Rebel, must be really fired up, not only to see the progress of last year getting to 9 wins, but to see some preseason accolades, which rarely happen for UNLV players, and certainly not picked often to finish second. What's up, Caleb? I bet he's with us. Now he is. That was a good setup.
Caleb.
We're getting nothing. We're getting nothing. The phone died. There he is.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back in effect. I'm sorry. I'm very excited. So excited I pushed the mute button.
Oh man, I did that last week on an interview, and I talked for like 90 seconds after I hit the mute. I kept going.
Just go. But no, yeah, I'm excited about UNLV. The preseason accolades is crazy. Like the thing about where this program has come from, where it's been, where I was when I was in this program, you didn't really see a lot of preseason noise or hype, or respect. Really, is what I take it as a sign of from the rest of the conference. As far as these preseason accolades. But for UNLV to have so many preseason, Jackson Woodard preseason, all-defensive player of the year, Jacob De Jesus, which I think is the obvious decision for a preseason special teams player of the year, five guys essentially being honored. UNLV second, I think, in the preseason rankings behind only Boise State, which a crazy story in itself that this is their 14th season. Being ranked as the number one preseason, so they've been consistent. But for UNLV to get there, I think says that there's some respect that was earned with the 9 wins last year. It also says that the Rebels brought back a lot of players that were really good for them last year, which I think was the big concern after the 9-1 year, after how things went for UNLV. That successful season for a lot of individual players and coaches, for that matter, it could have meant that they wouldn't be Rebels that next season. And that's a very realistic fear for a lot of these group of five lower conference schools. Guys get looked and moving on. So these preseason accolades are based on a lot of what happened last year, not necessarily what people know about the team, you know, going into this season, but just based on what they accomplished last season. So for these preseason accolades to stack up, and for them to be a lot of the key names from last season, I think it's big for UNLV and bodes well for what's going to happen in 2024.
Let's dive back into the preseason poll in about 8 minutes. I want to get to some NFL and these reality shows that are out. I know you haven't watched Receiver yet. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. But you are watching Hard Knocks with the Giants. It's a much different Hard Knocks than we've seen in the past. And there were so many talking points coming out of last night's show. We hadn't even hit on the weird conversation that the GM had with Saquon Barkley, and obviously that's one of the big themes of the show.
That was watching that. I felt like the boyfriend that wanted to dump the girlfriend but didn't want it to look like it was his fault. And that's what I interpreted that weird conversation was with Saquon. That was not how you talk to the best player on your team who you really want to keep back. That was how you let him down gently and kind of nudge him towards we should date other people. That was very awkward, and I got to tip my cap to GMs because those conversations are not easy to have. To have to talk to a guy who's probably never really heard no a lot in his life. You're talking about Saquon Barkley. He's been the best player at everywhere he's been. So telling him no, we don't want you is probably really, you know, a tough thing to say. But GMs everywhere have to have that conversation year in and year out. Now, are they always right to do these kind of things? No, absolutely not. Does that conversation count as an offer to Saquon? I don't think so. I don't think, you know, if we're talking about the best player on the team, you need to study the market yourself and come in with an offer if you really want to keep him. That's why I said that conversation was more like suggesting you leave than wanting you to stay. So it's good to see those things. I think for the fans, getting inside look, they basically have fantasy football conversations that are much like what these GMs are doing. One of my favorite scenes was like, hey, the Patriots are over there. They're on the other side. We're just going to walk over there and drop the little nugget. Like, hey, if you're doing something with a sick pick, think about us. And is that really the negotiation process? Is that how it starts? That's what happens? That's not special at all. Like, I bet Adam and his friends have a much more intense fantasy football draft setting than what I witnessed on some of these Hard Knocks episodes. But I love it. I'm here to consume it. It's great.
I got to tell you, I'm enjoying watching it. I'm not impressed by Joe Shane, GM. This GM, he is Joe Shane. First of all, I hated that conversation. I thought that was so wimpy. And he keeps talking about the optics and New York. Like, dude, just tell him. Just tell him. And I thought Barkley handled it really nicely. Like, you're basically telling me you don't want me. I didn't like the way that was handled at all. And then that whole thing, too, about let's go drop a nugget with the Patriots. Go talk to him like a man.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I like the nugget.
You like the nugget? Just plant the seed?
No, but, Caleb, I was going to ask you in terms of that conversation that was with Saquon. I mean, I get what he was doing. I would say, would you have rather seen him call him in and do it in person?
Yes. I think there's a couple of things. The status of Saquon goes into that for sure. This is not some regular guy. This is a franchise-changing player, the kind of thing he came in with the draft, the kind of production he's been for you when he's healthy, obviously. But respectfully, what Saquon Barkley means, I think you do him the courtesy of bringing him in. But I think, again, going with the cowardice, I think the wimpy, like Steve said, the approach to that, the fact that you didn't have the courage to do that led me to believe that you didn't really want to get something done. Because I called the guy in and I talked to him in his face if I really care to get him to stay. I think, again, that was more nudging you to go out there and hopefully prove, yeah. Because what if the market was low? What if he goes out there and the running back market is lower than he thinks? And, yeah, he comes back and is like, yeah, they did. This is what they would offer me, so I'll take what you guys. Then what do you do? You know, that's kind of, it's again, pushing the ball into his court instead of taking it by the horn. But, yeah, I definitely would prefer to see a guy like Saquon have that conversation in person. I agree with Steve. I think he handled it like a boss on the phone. Like, I told you where I want to go. You already know this. I don't know why you guys are trying to play this game. So, all right, have a good one. And I'll go to the Eagles.
I feel like we could go back and forth on this a lot. I guess my point is, like, it made sense to me what Joe Shane said, right? Where he said, look, you've talked to the agent. He said, what I don't want to do right now is give you a number, and it's low, and you feel disrespected by it, and then it shuts down the negotiations. Like, that actually made some sense to me.
It makes sense until you then give Saquon a phone call and say, I want you to test the free agent market, and then go get your heart broken out there, and then I'll give you whatever, you know, I'll basically force you into the low deal that I'm going to give you. That's more disrespectful in that sense. I think the right thing to do, which is, like I said, is you study the market. You see what running backs are getting compared to whatever the market is right now. You offer him that, like a respectable offer from there. You don't have to be the highest, but somewhere in the market. And then he can either take it or leave it. Then you say, I negotiated in good faith. I didn't know any better. I didn't know that the market was lower or higher. And that's why I didn't offer you that. But I think there was not a lot of effort from the first episode into that second episode, I think there was not a lot of effort into making sure Saquon got to stay. I think the writing was on the wall for them. And it's a good argument. I'd rather them just say, he's 27 years old. We're not paying a 27-year-old running back who had injury trouble. We're not going to negotiate that. The price is what it is. He's going to get a low contract for this one. I'd rather them do that. That's more of a bold way to do it. But to kind of, you know, test the free agent market, see what you get, and then come back to us. That's not how you handle a guy that you really want in your team. And it was clear to me that they didn't really want him around anymore.
Oh, me too. This sucks because I think we could do like 3 hours on every scene in the show. I guess I agree that they didn't want him. So what's the best way to handle that? Because this is, to me, what they ended up doing is like kind of saving face a little bit with him of like, hey, man, we really want you. Let's just find out what you're worth. Instead of calling him and saying, hey, bro, you're old. We're not paying you. We already paid Daniel Jones. Get lost. Like, that's not the right conversation to have either.
Well, it's not the right thing to do to pay Daniel Jones. I think that really gets to the problem. Like, that's the priorities have been out of line in New York for a while as far as what you should have been doing. The fact that you drafted Saquon Barkley however many years ago and the offensive line to this date is still so horrendous, that shows that you have some dysfunctionality in your ranks where you're kind of trying to build a team. So I think either Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley needed to have a better offensive line, and that's kind of been a formula for every team that's ever succeeded, is to build a good offensive line. So the fact that they haven't done that, now you're in this situation where you've wasted Saquon Barkley's prime. And now you're in the bad spot where you have to tell him you're past your prime. We can't afford to pay you that long, that much, because we can't build the rest of the roster. So I think you put yourself in a bad situation where there's no real win. There's no right way to do it. But the gentleman thing to do is to just sit Saquon down in the office and say, this is why I can't pay you. Yes, we've put our eggs in the Daniel Jones basket. Yes, it's not worked out so far. And while it's not been working out, you've taken injuries, you've been beat up, and you've aged. At this point, we're not comfortable paying a running back that much. That's the analytics of it. Here, this is what we can offer you. Would you be willing to take that? Yes, it might be a pay cut in your eyes, but would you be willing to take that to be a part of our organization going forward and retire a Giant, et cetera, et cetera? Deliver that. Not the phone call, like saying test free agency. I think that is more of a slap in the face.
Two episodes in, the GM of the Giants, the Hard Knocks, I'm not impressed. And, you know, it just struck me, and I never do this. I was like, that Shane's got to be a millennial. He's got to be. That guy can't be part of Gen X. And then I just looked it up. I'm like, son of a – millennials are 81 to 96. The guy was born in 79. He had millennial runoff on him or something. And here's the thing on the show. I don't think he garners a whole lot of respect. I don't think he's coming off well. I don't think I'd play for that organization under him. He seems like a sneaky guy. He's doing media training where he's going to, hey, how do I lie to the media? Like, that drives me nuts. And the guy who benefits from it is the guy who is straight on, whether you like him or not. At least you know what and where Brian Daboll is at.
Yeah, Brian Daboll is definitely the winner right now of the series. I think he's painted himself in a great light as a head coach. I going back to what you said, the media prep, that reminded me of watching an episode of Scandal, like Olivia Pope getting somebody prepped for their run-in with the media, like one of the presidential candidates or something. The fact that I'm sure other people do it, but the fact that it was such a big deal that they showed it and like he basically quoted the answers he was fed was kind of just like, it's kind of wimpy. I don't know. But Daboll, he's coming off like a football guy, right? Like if you didn't know his coaching history, because a lot of people probably, you know, the casual fan didn't know about the Brett Favre connection, didn't know about the Josh Allen connection because he wasn't the head guy in those situations. And then going back to Alabama, the success with Tua and with Jalen Hurts, it's like, dang, you hear that and you're like, that's impressive. And then to hear him talk, you know, X's and O's with the quarterbacks, I think it was cool to see him in that meeting engaging, not, you know, leaving it to the offensive coordinator. And maybe that was intentional. Maybe he wasn't the real feature piece of that meeting, but they scripted it to make it look like that for the show. So Daboll comes out looking like a genius. He looks like an offensive mastermind, and I'm sure he probably does have enough acumen to pull off that meeting. But he looks like somebody I'd want to play for. He looks like a player's coach. He's a straight shooter, dropping F-bombs, cussing, being cool, being one of the guys. I think, you know, his 40-yard dash, I think, Steve, you got competition. He thinks he can beat everybody, apparently, in the 40-yard dash. So, he's the winner right now of Hard Knocks. And sometimes that's what, you know, the public persona of a coach can change based on this. And maybe the fans of New York are probably the ones who have the ultimate say. So, like, if they like him still or not. But I don't see any reason why anybody would not like him after what you've seen through two episodes.
We could probably do 2 hours on the PR meeting. It was, I think, my favorite episode just because it's something that it's done every single day in every single sports organization in the world. For them to actually show it was really fascinating to me. For those that watch Raiders press conferences, the coach, when he does a press conference like three times a week, will be entering into the room with the director of public relations of the Raiders. That's what they're doing. They're having the meeting down the hallway. Hey, this will come up. This will come up. Things like, hey, this is a big story this morning. It's trending. They'll probably ask you about this. They'll probably talk about this. Those things happen all the time, but it's wild. But to see it live and, you know, happening in front of you is crazy. But you mentioned the meetings, the quarterback meetings, which I think to me was a highlight for a lot of people. Try to walk people through what exactly Daboll was doing to those quarterbacks. What was he trying to get from them?
Essentially, he was testing to see if their communication from college to the pro system translated. That's what I gathered from that, asking them to write down plays, to draw up plays and play designs to see if they could understand, one, the verbiage of calling the plays. I think it was Gun Charlie Wright, 60 something X drive. He corrected the X. I was close. I almost had it. He was trying to see if they could get the terminology down the way they call it in the NFL, and to see if that was something that was tough for them, if they could go through a progression like a pro. Because a lot of these college systems, while they're fancy and they're fast and they create a lot of explosive plays, they're simplified as far as play calling, but looking to the sideline. I think he asked J.J. McCarthy if that was if one of the play calls was the actual call or he got it signaled in from the sideline. That's one of the things they want to know is how are you going to be when you're having to repeat these plays out of a headset because it's the first time you're going to do it. I'm saying the play once in the headset. You got to repeat it now perfectly to the huddle. And I think one of the guys, Daniels, I think, actually stumbled and missed a couple of things that I think were important things to the play. I think I just missed it too. But, that's a signal like, hey, he missed that. That's something we'd have to work on. But then just trying to get their demeanor on the whiteboard. I think to watch the quarterbacks have to get up there and draw a play. One is a favorite play. Like, do you really even know your old playbook? And then can you tell me what I would be expecting from it? Like, what's the NFL read? What am I expecting out of quarter one, cover one here? And I think the Daniels answer, throw a touchdown, people probably look at that as a scapegoat answer. But I look at it as reading the play, looking at that play design, understanding what cover one is trying to do and what it gives up in that play. If I'm not throwing a touchdown, we lose on that play, that specific play. So throwing a touchdown is actually 100% the correct answer, the way I was watching it. But I think Daboll trying to get those things out of the quarterbacks is a part of the draft process that nobody really talks about. Yeah, he didn't work out of the combine. But for quarterbacks specifically, I think that stuff is the most important stuff. And it's cool to see the head coach be engaged in that stuff and get whatever evaluation he got from it.
I did want to ask real quick, the J.J. McCarthy criticism of they're calling the offensive line run reads from the bench. He's not doing that himself. How big of a deal is that?
I think it is a big deal. And I will say this from my own experience. I think there's things on the field that you see and feel that it's better for you to be able to have that command. I don't know how much it says about his aptitude that he didn't do it from the field. So I do think that was probably something that a cause for concern, especially going to the pros. There's so much command that you are expected to have. And I think Tom Brady has mentioned this in one of the podcasts, which he's going to be a fantastic TV personality, by the way. But he's mentioned, all these quarterbacks making these great plays. Well, you shouldn't even been running that play. And as a quarterback, you need to know why you shouldn't be running the play and what play to get us into to make it a good play. But I think the quarterback needs to have total control over the offense at the line of scrimmage. And I think Peyton Manning was probably the best ever to do it. And I'm not holding JJ to that standard, but to at least be able to make those calls in game, I think that's an important part of your workload. And it does kind of put a little bit of an asterisk next to any of the success you had in college, because if you didn't have that full mental workload, then your lightning load made it a lot easier to perform physically. So that would be a valid question for his career going forward. Can he adjust to having full control in an NFL setting? We'll see, I guess, whenever he gets his first snap as a rookie.
Caleb Herring on Cofield and Company, former UNLV quarterback, helps now with the quarterback parlance on Hard Knocks with the Giants, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Let's get back to the Mountain West Conference here for a second. It's interesting. Boise State, traditionally a great program. New quarterback, picked first. UNLV, we think new quarterback, unless Cam Friel pulls off the surprise. Can you justify picking those two teams, 1 and 2?
I will speak on UNLV first because I know them a little better, and yes, I could. I will say that the quarterback situation, while there's a new quarterback this year, Jade Maiva last year was technically new. New system. He wasn't the starter at the beginning of the season, and he took over a team, and as a backup, to be clear, he was a backup. He still ran the offense and the team effectively enough to get wins. So just because the quarterback's new doesn't necessarily mean he's not good enough to get it done. And I think whoever ends up getting a start of the three quarterbacks in the race for UNLV could be as good as far as efficient in the offense as Jaden Maiva was in order to get it done, especially with the return of Ricky White, Jacob DeJesus, some other weapons in the backfield, Thomas, an offensive line that's relatively intact. I think they, as a roster, have gotten better as a whole. I can see them improving from last year in a lot of ways, even with a new quarterback. For Boise, they have the reigning offensive player of the year. And I think I don't really, say running backs are game changers lightly, but this running back is a game changer for sure. So them being ranked, whoever's that quarterback, if they can hand the ball off to him, talking about Genty, if they can hand the ball off to him, the quarterback's going to be fine at Boise State, as long as they can keep that run game going. And that's kind of what you saw in the Mountain West Championship game against UNLV. The threat of Genty occupied UNLV defensively so much, and they did a relatively good job in the first half of kind of keeping his numbers down, but that impacted the big plays that Boise State was able to get in that first half, which turned out to be the difference in the ballgame. So as long as Genty's rolling, Boise State is just as powerful regardless of who's taking the snaps.
I need you to scold me for this one. I need to show more objectivity tomorrow when it comes to talking to coaches. We could speak to any group of players we wanted to today. I didn't even bother with Boise State. I don't like them. I like this. The culture around here and the snootiness, I don't want to be around them today because I knew I was going to come in all fired up. I'm like, I want to talk to the coach. One, because he's actually a good interview. The last guy was just dreadful. But, man, it's like around the conference, now I see, like, when you follow a program that actually can compete with Boise, I can see kind of the fire you'd have about, like, screw these guys. We want to beat them.
Yeah, I think that, and it goes back to something I said earlier. This is the 14th season consecutively that the football team has been the number one preseason-ranked team. And that's got to piss some of those 2 and 3 guys off. Like Fresno State or, you know, the San Diego State that have always kind of been in the mix. And even gone back and forth with winning the conference at the end of the day. Like the fact that they come in to these kinds of things or into the season with this sort of air of we're better than you, it's annoying at this point to those teams. And for UNLV, and I will say this as a proud alum and as a fan and as a supporter and as a contributor to UNLV football now, I haven't been in this realm where I'm like, no, we're going to beat you. In quite some time. And this year, it feels different. And maybe that's what you're feeling here, so I don't know if I can pull you back, because I agree with you. Like, I'm like, hey, no.
Here's the thing, Caleb. I get it from you. I didn't go to UNLV. I'm not necessarily a UNLV fan. I like when they do well. But, like, here's the bottom line. It is still the best program, and someone's got to knock them off consistently. I think Air Force has been there pretty damn close. There's been some other – Fresno is right there. Obviously, San Diego State's down a little bit. It sets up, and especially with all that's on the line, like now there's actually a spot available in the playoffs, and someone in the Mountain West is going to have a hell of a season. I think Boise believes they can, but I think there's so much depth that they're all going to kind of cannibalize each other. But lower your noses a little bit, okay, Boise, please?
just a little bit, just a tad bit. We're not gonna roll over and let you get that playoff spot. You know, you're gonna have to fight for it. And if you're a casualty of the carnage, so be it. But I know Rebel fans probably have a bad taste in their mouth losing to them in the championship game. So maybe rematch. I don't know. Let's see. Run it back.
Caleb, good job, man. Very good job. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Take care. Have fun out there.
When we come back, we'll get you ready for Team USA tonight over at T-Mobile.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I will admit, I am really a child. Out of it. True. Well, a couple of things that we were just talking about. One, I probably shouldn't be judging the totality of Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, just based on a reality show.
What more info do you need?
I just don't think he's come off well. Nor should I be... As a sports fan media person, I didn't mind the PB&Js. I thought that was kind of interesting. But as a media/sports fan, I should not get so wrapped up in rivalries. Because I was just talking about Boise State and the way they carry themselves. But I talked about it a couple years ago. Were you around the Sweet 16 here?
Yeah.
I wanted to punch every UConn person in the face.
Sure.
It's just so annoying.
Well, that's a Rutgers thing.
A little bit. I don't like snooty fan bases, and they're all over. I don't like the Kansas Jayhawk fan base.
Nobody does.
Exactly. But they do it the right way.
Yeah. Do they?
And, well, they better do it a better way because the Joneses have caught up. All right, wrapping it up here. Last couple of minutes as we'll be back tomorrow. A lot of coaches' interviews. Adam Hill's going over to Team USA. Go in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
How many threes does Joel Embiid shoot tonight? Should it be 0?
5.
Is there an issue with him shooting threes? He's supposed to be the big on the team, or one of the bigs.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Kerr said he wants to see him play around the rim, wants to see him stay inside, and then as you watch the scrimmages, Joel Embiid is being Joel Embiid, which is fine. I mean, he's been with the leading scorer in the NBA two of the last 3 years.
Oh, if they have some close games and they get brutalized around the rim, there's going to be some complaints about AD and Joel Embiid shooting threes.
Yeah.
Play big.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they want them to do. That's what Steve Kerr said, and I think it's a work in progress. Joel Embiid has drifted out a little bit, but if you're going to hoist up threes, I would probably prefer it's Steph Curry.
Yes.
Yes. That's me.
Back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
I hope you're mad about this, because I'm already starting to see the build.
I don't get worked up about much.
No. Hawk Tua girl, Haley Welch.
A million followers.
Just got 30K for an appearance.
She has a million followers on Instagram right now, I think.
Mad or America?
It's America. It's fine. Whatever. It's whatever.
Right?
Good for her. It was also she didn't do it on purpose, right? I mean,
this wasn't a plan. Okay.
No. And she's a drunk girl on Broadway. Like, just so happened to have this moment. I don't hate that. If it was something that was more coordinated and planned, I would definitely hate her.
Is SVC Media? I feel like I missed it. I always feel like it was before all of this. So next week?
SVC Media Day?
Yeah. I miss it?
That's probably next week.
I mean, does she have a steady stream of SEC appearances during the football season, like every week somewhere?
Well, the problem is she's in Tennessee. I don't think Vanderbilt's taking her on.
That's a good point.
No pun intended.
And then at some point, she is going to have to show a little versatility.
Well, she doesn't have much.
I hope. We don't know that yet.
We do. I watched a pretty long interview with her.
Oh, no.
nice girl.
Bad interviewers. They didn't know how to do it.
Very small town.
Well, that can be a good thing. That can be charming.
It's
she can
not.
Come on quick.
It's not. Excuse me.
Develop quickly. Don't be a pig.
Gotta watch your words.
All right, Adam Hill. I'll see you bright and early tomorrow. Good luck, buddy.
Oh, boy.
You better get some sleep. Enjoy the game tonight. We're back tomorrow with all the coaches from around the Mountain West Conference. Check our website for interviews.